Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Light this bitch up.
What is up, everybody? My name is James D. Fiore, and this is Blackballed. I am on the road in Milwaukee. I have been here for a few days now. I will have an interview coming up sometime next week or the week after because the 120th anniversary of Harley Davidson is taking place, and I was fortunate enough to be able to interview someone from the company here in Milwaukee, and we will get to that. And I have a guest today who literally needs no intro, so I will make the intro short. He's a businessman. You might know him from Dragon's Den. The rest of us know him because he's a firebrand on Twitter, and I love that about him. And his name is Mr. Brett Wilson. Brett, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing all right overall. I've had some roller coaster of health this last 6 months, leg and nerve damage and blah, blah, blah. But it's all repaired, and
yep.
I'm driving again for the first day in about a month, so... I'm smiling ear to ear, if you can see my ears amongst this mess.
Are you in a restaurant or an office right now?
I'm in my main office in Calgary.
So you have a nice office. I've met you a couple times. You might not remember. The one time was in Toronto during the Adrian Grenier after party with Nico, who's a mutual friend of ours.
Yeah, very much.
And I thought you were wonderful. You came over, you shook our hands, you were very gracious. The reason why I'm telling you this is not to butter you up, is because I find your Twitter game to be hilarious, sometimes really biting, but I don't ever take shit like that personally on social media. Like I watch people give their opinions on social media, and if they do it in a way that expresses themselves, I think that's fine. Do you think we have a problem? Do you think the problem with social media is not social media, but us? Because we tend to make the person's identity all they are, that one-dimensional thing that exists on Twitter, and that's it.
Oh, the extremes that are occurring on social media, I use, and forgive the swearing, but for me, I use Instagram for family and friends,
yep.
And I use Twitter for fighting and fucking around. And that's that's sort of two very different worlds. And again, family and friends on Instagram, it's pictures of my dog. I talk about my health journey. I make some comments that are political. But on Twitter, I'm somewhat relentless in the terms of trying to hold people accountable, whether it's at the provincial, the federal, or the municipal level in terms of the politics, or sometimes, you know, sports or whatever other activities we're on. And I generally, people have asked how I can put up with the responses, and I said, it's easy. You don't read them.
Yeah.
You don't read them. You know,
I read them, but I don't fucking care. Well, listen, I get between yourself this morning and the four or five times I've interviewed Max Bernier and the two times that I've interviewed Christine Anderson, I could wallpaper my bathroom with the hate mail that I get. Yep. And I'm always saying the same thing to these people. Like you and I, I know that we could get along. We could have dinner. We could be fine. Yep. Even though I probably disagree with, you know, half at least of what you say, I don't take it personally. I don't understand why people take this shit personally.
Well, and I do certainly go to some extremes on Twitter in terms of pushing the liberals. They're the people that scare me the most. And what I care about, if I didn't care about Confederation, I'd be speaking about separation and the evolution of taking the West out of Confederation, but just the opposite. I care about Confederation, therefore I care about what the liberals are doing to our country. It's that simple.
I use words like treason, and I noticed that you are pretty careful when you use that word, and often it ties in with what you call the eco-terrorists, what other people might call environmental activists, especially when they receive foreign funding, and then they try to dismantle a big piece of the Canadian economy. Is this the one here? Yeah, so this is a tweet from yours from about a year and a half ago. The hypocrisy of the eco-terrorists attacking only Canada's work-class hydrocarbon industries is creating a global chaos and economic instability for many countries, including Canada. Think Keystone XL and Energy East for secure energy supply and jail for treason. My question, I guess, to you is, does it have to do with, when you say treason, does that specifically have to do with foreign actors trying to impact a certain sect of the Canadian economy? And if so, would that include the people who funded the convoy and clogged our borders and stopped billions of dollars or cost the Canadian economy billions of dollars?
I treat the convoy very differently than many people. But let's just go back to the treason argument. Mm-hmm. I observe, you know, when we've got groups of people, and I don't care about their ethnicity, their color, their race, their gender, I don't care at all. But if you're blockading a railway, if you're blockading a roadway, if you're blockading and undermining a pipeline, I'm not happy. Mm-hmm. And for example, think about how much press and media has been attracted to the coastal pipeline attack, where 30 or 40 people, apparently of Aboriginal descent, coming out of Ontario, there's names online, but the conventional media has gone quiet on that. And they attempted, you know, they attacked people with axes, they attacked the equipment, they tried to blow up a site, and we've got no press, no media. And yet we take a guy who in Parliament makes a flippant comment about someone leaving their job mid-season, and the Lake media go nuts on that. So they leave alone what I would call true economic terrorism, economic treason. Going back to your comment about the issue with the convoy is twofold. One is the work that was done by a small group of people to blockade a highway, which was a border crossing. That's one story. That's a completely different story than what was happening in Ottawa. And Ottawa was where the story began. And people defend the two. They're two different stories in my mind.
Would the second one have happened without the first one?
That's a good question, and I don't know that. There was certainly a smaller group of people. I mean, it took dozens of people to do what was blockading at the Coots or wherever they were in terms of the border crossing, whereas there was thousands and thousands of people engaged with what was going on in Ottawa. And had Trudeau taken half an hour to meet with the people who were coming into Ottawa, they would have disappeared. They would have disseminated. Had they been treated with any level of respect, then the border crossing issue probably would have gone away.
Do you really think that would have worked? Because I feel like, the motto, if you could pick one tagline or slogan for that crowd, it would have been fuck Trudeau. And I'm not sure how many politicians would be. Like, if there was a sea of leftist protesters, and many of them had signs that said fuck Harper, I don't really see Stephen Harper going out there and having a chat with them.
No, that's fair. But when you stop and look at the families that were there, the women that were there, I mean, these weren't a whole group of guys carrying shovels that were attacking the industry. I mean, and take that extreme of one guy with a full mask walks around with a Nazi flag, and they start to pretend that the whole movement is about anti-Nazi or pro-Nazi or whatever. I wish that a couple of guys had tackled that bugger, torn his face mask off, and taken a picture of him, held him accountable for what he was doing. And again, was that legal to do that? Well, inside what was happening, I don't friggin' care. So I wish that some of the very few people who'd been extremists had been held accountable. And by the way, the fuck Trudeau's flags are coast to coast. So that's hardly...
I live in an area where it's very popular to have a fuck Trudeau. I live in Cheryl Gallant's riding in the Madawaska Valley. Yep. And it's all I see. I don't find it helpful in the political discourse, but, you know, we have free speech in this country, so I don't really care. But if someone walks towards me and they have a fuck Trudeau shirt and they want to talk politics, I'm probably inclined not to bother, because I already know that there's no, like, the nuance is gone, right? Like, fuck Trudeau doesn't have much nuance to it unless you want to have sex with him, right?
But James, the other side of that is Trudeau doesn't care. When we talk about our social media and how we don't care about responses, Trudeau has proven his disdain for the public is palpable. He just doesn't care. And again, we can get into clean energy regulations. We can get into how he treats the West from an economic, socioeconomic perspective. He just doesn't care. So that kind of renders the flag something like social media. It's just a response. Just ignore it.
Yeah. What is the right, now that you mentioned that, I want your opinion on this, because listen, I know you get a hard ride from the left in this country. I think sometimes it might be deserving. Sometimes I don't think it is. I think that you, if everyone knew sort of the complete Brett Wilson package, they'd see that, you know, you've like climbed mountains for charities and stuff. Like you're not just a guy that just spends his time like counting his money. So I think that there is a almost an activist inside of you. You do good work for women who experience abuse and for eating disorders and things like that. And I'm curious about when it comes to the environment, you also seem to be, I would say, sometimes moderate on environmental issues. I don't know what your views are on climate change exactly. I did some research. I saw a few tweets, but I don't know exactly how you feel about that. But if we take away climate change and we just think about pollutants in our environment, things like orphan wells and things like that, what is the solution in order to help clean up the environment from specifically the energy sector?
Well, let's go back to the bigger picture, and that is the two issues that the globe faces right now, population and pollution. Mm-hmm. And nobody wants to talk about overpopulating. But when I travel the world, I've been to the slums of Nairobi, of Kenya, of Nairobi, Kenya. I've been to Port-au-Prince. I've been to in Africa. I've been here in New Delhi. I mean, what's happening in those horrible living conditions is that the population is growing through rape and incest. Nobody wants to talk about that. So let's just park that for a moment. Population, we're not looking after the people on our planet. And we're making a priority out of emissions in downtown Toronto. So I'll be a little cynical on that. So one is population, the other is pollution. We say nothing but the fact that Southeast Asia dumps 90% of its garbage into the ocean because it's diluted. It just goes out. And so here we are with single-use straws, or plastic straws can't be used in Canada, and we make an issue out of that, and yet we don't spend a penny helping the world recycle its plastics. So that goes back to Canada could be doing a better job on a global basis. And again, I heard your earlier comment that you don't always agree in terms of the positions I take. I've never taken a position that I can't defend. I don't do it for the politics. I don't do it to just challenge. I do it because I genuinely believe in it. And that goes back to global issues. Our population, nobody wants to talk about it. Pollution, nobody really wants to talk about it. So I'm not certain that CO2 is the biggest issue that we face on our planet. But here we are. Let's accept that CO2 is our issue. I'm going to work with that. I invest around that. I've made money investing because people believe that CO2 is a pollutant. But let's go back to the bigger picture. How do we provide electricity for everybody in Canada? Under the new CER, clean energy regulations that are coming out, two provinces get screwed. Only two, Saskatchewan and Alberta. And that's because we rely on fossil fuels. Saskatchewan still has coal, and Alberta is off of coal, but only using natural gas. I built a natural gas power plant with my partners. We have a natural gas-fired power plant. Right now, what's happening in the federal government, CER, clean energy regulations, what's coming down is they're going to try and shut down all of our power plants that don't go to zero, what they call net zero emissions. And by the way, I'm quite a cynic on the word net zero because there's no such thing. In fact, if we want to pause for a moment, electric vehicles are not net zero.
Because of the manufacturing process.
Well, there's the manufacturing and the recycling and then the battery. And then there's wear and tear on the roads. Who pays for that? The roads get used. Someone has to fix the roads, repair them, asphalt, whatever. Who's doing that? Do the EVs not participate in that at all? And the idea that we're going to take to an extreme EVs, pardon me for digressing, but taking EVs to the kind of capture that they want, 50%, 100%, whatever it is, our demand for baseload power goes up by 25 or 30%. That's number one. Number two, we cannot charge EVs in the general economy. We cannot charge them. It's period. We cannot charge them. in remote or in rural areas where, or call it the edge of Calgary, where people have a single car garage or maybe no garage. They've got no way of charging their car. Then you take the inner city density where the cars are lined up on the streets and park. We have no way of charging them. Don't even pretend that there's a way. There is no way. I just met last week, 2 weeks ago, with the folks at NMAX and said, why are we pretending that we can get power to the streets? We can't. They don't have the infrastructure, nor do we have the ability to produce it. And you, I mean, people can argue with me, but prove it. There is no way of doing it. We can't do it. So the idea that we're going to have EVs as the solution to climate change, we're 1.5% of global emissions. The U.S. is 13%. Together, we're 15% of global emissions. Every week, China puts on two coal-fired power plants that contradict or counteract all of the work we do in Canada. Every week, we have two more coal-fired power plants going on. We ship coal to China. And do you know that we ship coal to China every day?
I didn't know that. But is that because we have a refinery issue in this country?
No.
No?
We have, there's two types of coal, met coal and thermal coal.
Can you tell this is way above my pay grade, Brett?
No, that's all right. I want to keep it simple because that's where I'm best. That's where I'm happiest as well. But there's two types of coal, thermal coal and met coal. Metallurgical coal is a hotter coal. Thermal coal is used, typically it's the waste coal. It's the lower grade coal, and it's used just to burn in boilers to make electricity across the United States, certainly a little bit in Canada. But metallurgical coal gets shipped to China every day so that they can make steel. Do you know that we don't charge any carbon tax to that coal? So here we are. Justin Trudeau ships coal to China without a carbon tax every day. Do I have a reason to be a little fussed about how he's approaching shutting down the city or the province of Saskatchewan because they burn coal right now? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. I'm really fussed. And again, this idea, they just, the rules and regulations being brought in by Guilbeault, I mean, basically at the corporate level, call it the board level, Trudeau has nothing. Trudeau has nothing in terms of competent management. Guilbeault spent time in jail for being an eco-terrorist. And yet he's the guy who's now telling us that we have to implement the clean energy regulations. And these are coming in the summer. We've already objected to them. I mean, in the province of Alberta, we've asked the federal government, let us upgrade existing coal or gas-fired power plants so that they're more efficient. We can't. Let us build a new power plant so that we can meet the baseload requirements in our province. In the next 5 to 10 years, Alberta will not have enough power to meet its baseload needs, which means you're going to have to tell part of Edmonton, part of Calgary, and maybe part of Fort McMurray to shut down for a couple hours every day. That's again, I can defend those numbers. That is factual. People can say, oh, yeah, but you got renewables. Well, renewables are wonderful, and I've made a lot of money investing in renewables, a lot of money, but they're not reliable. Natural gas is the most reliable power source for creating electricity, so that's reliable. But the unreliables is unbelievable, and that's the natural gas, or pardon me, the renewables, which is solar and wind. And on days when it's not sunny, on days when it's not windy, we have no renewables. So, again, let me know which hours you don't want power, and we'll make sure to take power away from you so that the rest of us can have it.
Yeah, let's pivot then to carbon tax, because I know that I used to own a cottage a few years ago, and I remember not being there and still paying carbon tax, even though there was no power going to my cottage. There was like a delivery charge and a carbon tax attached to it. Yep. I heard Pierre Poilievre talk about the Center for Disease Control in BC. This is from memory, so I could get something wrong here. But talking about how there's going to be an increase of about 61 cents a liter for gasoline and how that would impact the price of groceries. I would like to know what your thoughts are if we talk about the price of groceries, because Loblaws... what's his name? Galen Weston made, record profits for Loblaws during a time when apparently the reason for the increase of costs was due to, life costs like food and everything being more expensive to ship. But he's making record profits. And I know you probably don't like Jagmeet Singh, but I mean, he was the one that really grilled this guy over how do you reconcile that? Can you explain that to a person who's like an economic, like illiterate over here? Like, why are those two things coexisting?
Well, first of all of the grocery companies compete. All of the grocery companies work with 1% and 2% margins at the gross. So they're all working with the same game. Now, what's happened and what bothers me the most, let's go back to Pierre, and I don't care about Jagmeet, but let's go back to Pierre. If I was a single mom with two kids having to pay another 61 cents, being told that I shouldn't be driving my car, that carbon taxes are a price on pollution. So once again, we're penalizing the lifestyles. Ignore that again. I'm just going to leave the food alone. But the carbon tax issue, you're penalizing the cost of living for everyone. And I'm going to be really blunt. I don't care. I don't even fuel my own vehicles. I got people who fill my cars. I don't care what the carbon tax costs me. So let's just get that aside. Mm-hmm. But I care what it means to some of the people that work for me, some of the single moms. We've got people at entry-level jobs throughout our province, throughout our country, and they're being penalized in a punitive way. And this idea that it's a price on pollution, well, it's not a price on pollution. It's a penalty for those who buy and use oil and gas. It's a penalty. It's not just a price on pollution. If they really wanted to price pollution, then why are we shipping coal to China for free? There's no carbon tax whatsoever. So think about the hypocrisy embedded in that. We are 1.5% of global emissions. We're using carbon tax to punish the creation of emissions. The science around emissions is imprecise, imperfect. I don't agree with it, but again, I'll accept it. So let's just put that aside. I'm not debating whether or not emissions are a problem. Let's pretend they are. But punishing people in Alberta, or sorry, across Canada at entry-level positions, they're 20, 25 years old. And again, I use the example of a single mom with two kids trying to get her kids to a daycare in the morning, then get down to the office or the job that she's got. It's just so unfair. And this belief that these carbon taxes are going to save the planet is delusional. It's absolutely delusional. It's bullshit. It's absolutely wrong.
Okay, I want to switch gears for a second, and thank you for listen, there's a lot I don't understand about that, but you seem to make a lot of sense to me. I'm one of those guys that's people call me a pain in the ass and a fence sitter because I really don't like traversing to a right wing or left wing side. I don't even know if I'm a centrist. I'm just so kind of disgusted with the entire political system that I see myself as a spectator. But it's interesting to hear your point of view. But you mentioned something before about what Pierre Poilievre said in the House. I'm going to play that clip and then I want to come back and we'll talk about that for a second.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I was a high school teacher before getting into politics, and I'm having a little trouble remembering what exactly the job that the Leader of the Opposition had before getting into politics.
And he left right in the middle of the semester, and I'm having trouble remembering why.
Oh!
Now, Mr. Speaker.
So that was Pierre Poilievre, and he was making reference to a story that that came out a long time ago. There was and it was a story out of the Buffalo Chronicle. This is what you said in a response to Andrew Coyne. Not really a journalist I really enjoy. He said, God, Poilievre is a thug. And you said to him, don't watch it if you don't like him. That said, you are paid by the moron across the floor. I'm assuming you're making a reference to the media fund in Canada to make political.
$600 million a year.
That's right. To make political comments like this. And if nothing happened to cause Justin to leave school mid-semester, then why isn't that disclosed? If you're a good reporter, report on that. Glad you advised God of your disingenuous observation. He will stop you at the pearly gates and you won't get in for being so rude. Your stupidity won't matter at that point in the game. Now, this is this story.
That tweet. Thank you. I like that one.
I love that tweet because I am a person who I have a kind of weird history with this story because I was a reporter who was digging on this, and I knew a lot of other ones were as well. And my sources were people that were former Harper staffers. And I felt like I was played by the time it was done because I couldn't find anything. And people that were more seasoned than I was also couldn't find anything. And we were trying. Trust me, we were really trying. Mm-hmm. So the rumor came out, and there were other people sort of nibbling the edges of it, like the Warren Kinsellas of the world and stuff like that. And, you know, the story is that they say that Justin Trudeau left the high school because he allegedly had a fling with a student who was underage, and that the rumor is, and I'm not trying to don't send me your hate mail. It's not as if it's not already out in the ether. But the rumor is that the father of the daughter had negotiated a $2 million settlement attached to a non-disclosure agreement. That part of the story, in fact, the entire story is not proven. But I find it really interesting that we have now a kind of media that probably wouldn't hunt for that story because it's Justin Trudeau, but would be climbing the walls if that rumor was attached to Pierre Poilievre. And that's sort of really what makes me a little bit irked about this.
Well, let's start with where this conversation began in the House of Parliament. Trudeau took a shot at Pierre Poilievre because at the age of 25, he came into Parliament.
I think it was 23, and he became the secretary to the prime minister immediately, which was pretty crazy. But go ahead.
Gotcha. I saw 25 yesterday, but 23, 25 doesn't matter. The real point is he came in young. Mm-hmm. The fact that he didn't have a career before that is irrelevant. But so Trudeau is allowed to make fun of the fact that this guy comes in and serves in parliament for 20 plus years. What does Paul have right now? 45? I don't even know.
Something like that. Yeah.
Ballpark. So call it 20 years of service. And he takes a shot at Poilievre for having no job prior, so probably education. And there's a lot of story in terms of Poilievre born into a, you know, he wasn't born into a house of privilege, adopted. Mm. Again, there's lots of stories, but there was no privilege. So Trudeau is welcome in terms of taking a shot at this young guy for coming in and serving in Parliament. He was elected. He wasn't appointed. He was elected. He went door to door and got himself elected. And he's done that consistently for 20 plus years. And then Trudeau gets a shot at him, no cost, nothing, no one cares. And it's funny, everyone in the Liberal Party stands and laughs at the fact that Poilievre has never had another job other than serving in Parliament. I don't know why that's funny, but they make a laugh out of it.
I think, honestly, the humor on the Liberal side is that Pierre Poilievre often talks about taxpayer money being wasted. And I guess what they're saying is that you've only been paid in taxpayer money. I don't find it all that funny. I get it, but, you know, whatever.
Well, there isn't a member of Parliament who isn't paid by taxpayer money.
Right.
There isn't a person working in Ottawa who isn't ultimately paid by taxpayer money. So, right. Again, I find it the hypocrisy of the humor is really what I'm driving at. Because on the other side, all that Poilievre says is you left mid-season and no one knows why. Now, again, it ties to this underground story. But again, to me, they're equal stories. They're both humorous. They're both shots at each other. No big deal. Nobody seems to be able to prove that. Again, there's lots of stories about an NDA. There's lots of stories about $2.5 million paid. Lots of stories about a young girl. Again, whether that's true or not doesn't really matter right now. All that we're talking about is the hypocrisy of a couple shots. And legacy media goes down on Pierre Poilievre and says nothing about this privileged little boy who came out the trust fund baby, if you will, who now runs our country with disingenuous intent. So again,
I think probably the media would, like, you know, even from where I'm standing, it's not quite the same thing. I mean, humor is a very broad brush, overarching thing to say, because really the comparison is you've been at the public teat for 20 something years. And then the other joke is you were fired for having sex with an underage woman. So I get what you're saying, but I think that the vibe of each of those jokes that fall under the humor umbrella were vastly different. But I want to know something.
Yep.
Is this you or somebody that you know offering $500,000 to students, faculty for 1999 to 2002 from West Point Grey that may be having incriminating information regarding Justin Trudeau? Save Canada, please retweet. This anonymous user is offering $500,000 to solve this mystery. Is that you or someone that you know, Brett?
I'm going to look it up because I would top it up with another $5,000.
$500,000.
No. I'm not. I don't play that game. I have no idea who the contrarian is, but clearly someone is saying, let's play in a serious way on this. And I get, as you moment ago just said, there's two extremes. One's talking about joking about having sex with an underage girl, and the other's being on the public teat. But my point, I don't see them as widely apart as that, especially when one gets no notice and the other is worthy of legacy media saying you're the worst human ever.
Did you see how they twisted? They put themselves into a pretzel, not explaining why what Pierre said was so offensive. That was what I found really interesting about how they covered it.
There was derogatory comments. I can't recall who, but again, legacy media went all down on Poilievre. And I'm just kind of going, really? You know, it's an old story. If you don't believe it, laugh it off, move on. We've got a country to run.
Yeah.
And yet we made that an issue. And again, let's go back to clean energy regulations, where we're going to shut down Alberta and Saskatchewan's ability to have enough power to run their economies. We don't. That's not an issue for legacy media. Come on.
I actually, not only do I not mind this $500,000 thing for information that leads to it, I actually find that to be very Larry Flint-esque. So what that guy could inadvertently do, because it sounds like he doesn't like Trudeau very much, is end up at the end of all this, well, I guess it's not true. No one came forward to collect that $500,000. Like, the, you know what I mean? Like, the, he might inadvertently prove that it's not true, which I think would be better for the country as well. Finding out one way or another would be better for the country, I think, because people are seem distracted by it. And then Pierre won't be able to crack any jokes anymore. That will not land right as far as the legacy media goes. But
James, let's just park and throw away this whole story about what happened at his school. Throw that away. We got bigger issues throwing. I mean, let's also remember that while that was being published, yesterday's Financial Post referred to Trudeau as wearing ethnic makeup.
Yeah.
Ethnic makeup. I've never heard of ethnic makeup as a way of downplaying a guy who did blackface so many times he can't remember. And this is, again, so this is meant to be funny and who cares?
And can I ask you, the room. I would like to ask you a question about that. I know you only have a few minutes left, but I would like to know, when that blackface story came out, I thought that we had an opportunity to sort of do away with the cancel culture, and I'm using air quotes, in this country. I thought that Andrew Scheer missed an opportunity. I thought he should have actually, instead of admonishing Trudeau for something that he did two decades ago, what I thought he should have done is said he was obviously young and we're not going to spend time getting distracted on something that he did when he was younger. He was not that young, but it happened a long time ago. And maybe this is a good moment. Maybe this is a good moment for the liberals to remember that the next time someone uses the wrong pronoun, that maybe they should just relax a little. But he didn't do that. He played the progressive card and tried to really attack him with it. And I thought that was a mistake.
Well, the flip side of that is that he was doing it while he was a teacher to the kids in our country. Mm. Again, drama teacher, I don't care what he was teaching. That was his role. And so he was meant to be a leader. He came out of a family of privilege. He came out of a family that was extraordinarily well known. So in terms of accountability, I would hold him to a somewhat higher standard. And again, apparently ethnic makeup isn't such a bad thing.
I can't stop laughing at that.
Yeah. I've never fucking heard. Again,
nobody has fucking heard of that, Brett.
It makes no sense. And again, that is for me the ultimate proof that legacy media only cares about the extremes. And in the fact that they were willing to attack Poilievre and yet Trudeau just tap dance along as if nothing had ever happened. Because, you know, what's a little ethnic makeup? A little black here, a little orange here, a little gray here. Who knows? It makes no sense.
Yeah. Before we go, I just want to let you know, I found out by doing my Brett Wilson deep dive that you're friends with Ricky Gervais. And is that friendship still going strong? Because he always likes and retweets my articles about him, and he's my bucket list guest. So if there's anything you can do, Brett, you just let me know, okay?
You know, I had the privilege of meeting Ricky Gervais at a conference out in Banff, and he filled a room, and there was 400 or 500 people in it. And then I was on a panel immediately after that, and this room disappeared. There was 100 people left. And
I saw a quote from him that said that because you guys had tinkered with the idea of doing like a tour, I think for charity, and you would do 15 minutes and then he would do an hour and a half. And he was like, oh, that sounds wonderful to come on after someone chokes for 15 minutes.
We had some fun with a bunch of different ideas. I actually went over to England to meet with him.
Yeah.
I had some other stuff doing, but I spent a whole afternoon with Ricky, and he put out a tweet one time saying, please follow Brett Wilson. He's my favorite philanthropist. So again, a little bit of linkage, and he still follows me. So you look at that on Twitter. I've tried to get him to Calgary to speak again, I don't care what he talks about, but as a comedian, I think he's nothing short of brilliant.
He's the greatest living comic, I think. I really do.
And bluntly, we've offered him a lot of money to come to Calgary, and he's just too busy.
Well, don't invite him during Stampede because he doesn't like that kind of thing because he loves animals. Yeah,
too hard on the animals. But
yeah,
no,
that's right.
It doesn't matter. But we looked at doing several different things. At one point, he wanted me to be a philanthropist in England, and then he would be my nephew, and he'd be made up so much that people wouldn't recognize him. And then we'd bring in people coming right out of school at the high-end schools, Oxford, whatever, and he would make a mess of their lives. His willingness to challenge, call it the norms in society, is extraordinary. And he's certainly one of my, he is my favorite comic.
Yeah, mine as well. Well, listen, I appreciate the time. It only took 14 months to book you.
So well, we could do this every few months if you're up for it.
Now I'm up for it. I'm up for it. I can't wait to get the hate mail. You weren't hard enough on him. You didn't dunk on him and drag him, and I don't do that to any of my guests. So,
well, no, someone here says I disagree on most things, but he made some points. All right. Not so skillful. Avoid the orphan wells. Oh, orphan wells. Give it a go. There are thousands and thousands of orphan wells. And one of the technologies that we're investing in right now is going back into the orphan wells with new tools and toys for exploiting what's downhole. So orphan wells aren't the issue that are, again, I've got a few people on the left that think that a company that I was involved with that has some orphan wells, the company ended up going bankrupt. And again, I've been in a lot of businesses. Those wells ended up going with the assets to the bank. And it's the bank's issue, not mine. I just don't get why someone thinks that I used to own 4 or 5% of a company, and now I'm 100% responsible for a half a dozen wells. It makes no sense.
It's almost as if people only scratch the surface and then make up their mind.
Hey, Stonechild, thank you. You're welcome. Yeah.
All right, Brett Wilson, thank you very much for joining us. I will take you up on that, sir, and we'll see you hopefully in a few months.
All right, take care now.
Thanks. Have a good one. Bye-bye. Okay, I hope everyone's going to calm down now. You know what's funny? I got more hate mail from people for Brett Wilson than I did for Max Bernier, which I think is funny. People's personality, and you heard him say it, on Twitter are not people's overarching personality in real life. Whether you like that or not, whether you think people should be more themselves, when they're on Twitter, that's a totally different story. But, you know, this is not something that people need to get upset about. He seems like a very, I challenge anyone to tell me that interview wasn't with a rational person who you might just disagree with. And that's really what I'm trying to do here on Blackballed and at Cryer Media. And I think a lot of us here at Cryer Media are trying to do that. Walk this balance. I don't like polarization. I think it's the cancer of our society. And the only way to remedy polarization is to get sides, and there's more than two sides. And trust me, I know, because I'm not on either of the sides that seem to be most represented, to talk to each other. And I really appreciate Brett Wilson coming. We have a couple of things that we want to announce. I don't think there'll be a casual Friday this week again, because I'll be on an airplane. So that's not going to work. But we have some stuff in store for next week. Again, I have that Harley Davidson interview that I'm going to put out. I might put that out a little bit later, actually, because the anniversary is in July. I think it's July 13th for the 120th anniversary of Harley Davidson. But either way, I thank you very much for joining, and we'll see you next time on Blackball. Blackball. Black,
the Podcast Super Friends is a monthly meeting of five podcast producers.
Hi, I'm Catherine O'Brien from Branch Out Programs in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
I'm John Gay from Jag and Detroit Podcasts.
I'm Matt Kundle from the Sound Off Podcast Network.
I'm David Yes from Pod 617, the Boston Podcast Network.
And I'm Johnny Peterson from Straight Up Podcasts.
Together, they form the Podcast Super Friends, an alliance of podcast masterminds sharing best practices, insights, and discussions to help make you a better podcaster. Follow or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at soundoff.network.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all had.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.